they got nothing up on Mars. Half as fast as hot rod cars. Gonna trade this Sputnik of ours. Take me to your leader.
Oh, my God. That was Take Me to Your Leader by Timmy Rogers. And before that, I can't remember what we had. Little Martian, and I can't remember who did it. Anyway, I'm going to play those all in the next week or two because I just found this CD that was... you know, you get these CDs, and they're all space UFO flying saucer music, and they all suck. Those three songs weren't so great, but... there's a few real gems on there. Actually, the Little Martian one with the country song, I like that a lot. Anyway, this is Radio Misterioso here on April Fool's Day of 2007. And as promised, we have Tim Binall here, host of the web radio show Binall of America.
What's that? Should I say hello now?
Yeah, I guess you should say hello now.
All right, I'm all confused. You know, going from guest to host and back and forth here, I'm all riled up.
You know what I did today is I took a swing with a softball bat and I hit myself in the back of the head. It was the stupidest thing I ever did. So if I'm even more confused than normal, please excuse me.
Oh, all right. Well, yeah. I think we'll be okay. We got two hosts in the kitchen here. Well, hopefully I'll defer to you, of course.
Oh, well, whatever happens, happens. It's the way the show is. Let me do a little introduction. Tim's been the host of Been All of America since, is it 2005, Tim?
Yeah, September of 2005 is when we kicked off the season one and seasonal format that we do now.
Yeah, and since then the show has quickly grown to become one of the most listened to webcast shows about the paranormal. He's interviewed researchers like Stanton Friedman, Melinda Leslie, Lauren Coleman, Richard Dolan, and strangely enough, great interview, Royce Myers of UFOWatchdog.com. So welcome, Tim, finally. The official, here you are, welcome, and... let's get going.
All right, awesome. Yeah, I'm psyched to be here on the high holy day of professional wrestling. I just finished watching WrestleMania, and now I'm capping it off with Radio Misterioso, so it's a wild day for me. I'm excited to be on. I feel like we've talked like five times in the last week. This is going to be a super laid-back interview, I have a feeling.
Yeah, probably. I typed up a bunch of questions based on some of the stuff that we talked about and also things that I was just wondering. You know what? I never asked. No, I think we did. We talked about this probably on your show. And I asked people this first always. Well, some background on yourself, I guess. And how'd you get into this silly subject of flying saucers?
Oh, wow. All right. Let me see here. Well, just a little background on me. I graduated from Syracuse University in 2001 and sort of meandered around after that in post-college life.
Best way to do it.
And then from there, let me see. I was kind of just wondering what I was going to do with myself and came upon a copy of Rule by Secrecy, the Jim Mars book.
Oh, yeah.
And completely flipped my lid pretty much from that and just started using that as a roadmap to investigate other stuff. And along the way, discovered Coast to Coast AM. And started writing about them on my website, and that sort of blossomed into its own little online world with sub writers and stuff like that. We have a great staff of writers that we've acquired over time, and just sort of organically came about. And next thing I know, I had a little radio show because I wanted to sort of do my own thing separate from what I was hearing on the radio, and that's how Been All of America Audio came about. And I have a feeling that any future iterations of the whole thing will kind of grow out of this.
Well, the audio, yeah, I was going to discuss that too. The audio show kind of grew out of the website. Also, how do you get interested in flying saucers by reading Rule by Secrecy? I haven't read it. Is there a chapter on UFOs in that, or I'm sure it's mentioned?
Yeah, well, like at the end, it sort of references to his Jim Mars, obviously, is the author of Rule by Secrecy. It references to his other book, Alien Agenda. So then I quickly went out and got that and read that.
It's a good introduction.
Yeah, they're both great books to really lead you to check out other stuff and other researches and stuff. That's kind of how I ended up finding about all these other people and, you know, how I got hooked up to Coast, because they were always on the show, all these different sources that were in the book, and I was like, oh, this David Icke character is going to be on Coast to Coast, or, you know, this other guy who said something in this book is going to be on there. So, Let me see. So then I always sort of had an interest in UFOs, and I think it is kind of like the big daddy of esoterica. You know, it's the crown jewel of the paranormal, and so that definitely is where my focus lies of all the subjects, even though I do kind of love them all for the most part. You know, I'm not a huge fan of some sub-subjects. But, yeah, UFOs is like the big daddy and definitely one of the most fascinating because it's so huge and there's so many personalities in the field that are just fascinating people.
Yeah. You know what? You don't have to do the radio thing. You can just, you know, you can extemporaneize like Paul did last week. How does your website kind of interact with the radio shows? You said that it kind of grew out of it, but why did you start doing the radio shows? Was it like a natural thing, or you just wanted to talk to people and have an excuse like me?
I think I just had like questions for people that were in the field, and I'd heard interviews with them, but some of the questions weren't being asked, and a lot of times when you hear an interview with somebody, it's like what they're talking about with their latest thing, which is really awesome and great and all that, and obviously that's why they're on the radio shows. But at the same time, for people who are just getting into stuff, they don't know the backstory or what this person may have worked on like way before they were on, they're on the radio now. Do you know what I mean? Like if a
yeah.
guy wrote a book 10 years ago, you know, he's not doing interviews about it anymore. But for people who are sort of coming along later on down the line
right.
and they're reading the book now, they might want to hear that interview, and the medium of podcasts and stuff wasn't even out back then. So you can kind of like throw back to a lot of old stuff for people who are just getting into it or people who want to rediscover new material that hasn't, like, you know, that hasn't had hasn't got the time to shine in this new technical landscape, you know, like kind of like the Paul Benowitz story or Bill Moore and his antics and stuff. All that sort of stuff, and even the old historical UFO-type situations, you know, like the congressional hearings and Condon Report and that kind of stuff.
Right.
You don't really hear shows about those things anymore because everyone's talking about, you know, the Phoenix Lights anniversary or Symington or, you know, Hellier or some other stuff that's O'Hare. That's the big UFO story to du jour.
Yeah, exactly. That's usually what people are concentrating on. You know, the first time I heard Art Bell was in, I think, 93 or 4 or something like that. We were driving back from one of the co-editors of the magazine with me, excluded me. We were driving back from San Francisco, and, God, who was it? Bill Hamilton was on, if you know who that is.
Yeah.
Yeah, and we were just amazed that somebody like that, and we knew who Bill was, and my friend Robert, who was with me, had gone to meetings at his house, like in the 70s and 80s. You know, he was doing UFO, you know, get-togethers at his house, and here he was on national radio on AM, and we were kind of blown away, and I started listening to it after that. Do you still listen to the show quite a lot, or are you more?
Definitely, yeah. I listen to it all the time still. I'm still a big fan and listening constantly. Still write about it at the website too. That's been kind of a sort of weird situation with Banal of America in a way, because I have people that write to us that want us to stop covering Coast to Coast AM. And it's like, I don't know, if I stop, like, what? I've been covering Coast to Coast AM since we started, and the radio show came out of that, and it's a weird situation. Like, we have a foot in both camps, kind of. It's strange.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. I don't listen to the show too much because... And I didn't know why. And one time I asked Jacques Vallée when I met him like 3 times. So I asked him, why aren't you doing UFO stuff anymore? And he said, because I was not learning anything anymore. And that's kind of why I don't listen to Coast, unless somebody, you know, you actually hipped me one time when Dodie was going to be on again about Serpo.
Yeah.
And that's when I listen. It's like, oh, geez, these people are going to, you know, I'm vitally interested in this because I know these people and maybe they're going to say something new or whatever. But the thing that pisses me off the most is open lines.
Oh, they're awful. Although
yeah.
I'm looking forward to our open lines here on Radio Misterioso because I want to talk to the Radio Misterioso listeners. So
yes, of course.
That's what I am excited about.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. The people, generally, the questions I get on here are, you know, the audience is a little bit different. It's much more concentrated
yeah.
and, you know,
yeah,
but there's people calling. Go ahead.
Well, the Coast to Coast AM callers are kind of sad people in general. No, not really. They're not sad people, but... You know, their questions are usually awful, or they waste a lot of time with their UFO sightings, which is, like, the worst. It's maddening. That's
yeah.
the best way to put it. It's maddening. I just don't care about someone. The worst example was they had Dan Aykroyd on to talk about his big UFO movie that came out last June, and
yeah.
he was only on for, like, an hour. And that's like 40 minutes with commercials and everything. And they had a lady on, and she took like 4 minutes to tell her story. So she took like 10% of the Dan Aykroyd appearance, when so much more good could have come out of that than handing the show and the forum over to this woman and her UFO story. I was outraged. I still am pretty upset about that.
Yeah, there's, you know what? There's got to be somebody on there, or the host or somebody, that does at the National UFO Convention like 2 years ago. Guy Malone somehow was commandeered to be sort of a audience wrangler when the question thing came up. And if somebody went for like more than 30 seconds without asking a question, you'd say, "I don't hear a question here. Next." That was my,
I like that.
I loved that, because most people get up to, you know, not most, but some people will get up to give a speech. They're not really asking a question.
Or they want to like sell you on their theory, and you know, I appreciate it and everything, but sometimes it's an inappropriate time.
Well, one, it's inappropriate, and two, if you got some theory or something you're working on, it's going to take a lot longer than, you know, a 30-second or 10-second whatever question or comment to do that. And it's just, it just becomes, and it's selfish because other people don't get to say anything.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's the other part of it, I think, is rude. And people call it, we had this joke when I had these friends I used to go camping with every year. And a friend of mine, we were sitting around the fire all drunk and stoned or whatever, and he said, he goes, "This is a typical caller on Coast to Coast. It's like, hello, Art? Yes, sir. You know about that Hale-Bopp comet?" No, that's Hale-Bopp, sir. What? Hale-Bopp. Oh, sorry, wrong number.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah, exactly. And that made me fall out of my seat, but probably because I was in an altered state of mind. Do you have a lot of coast to coast like commentary and reporting on the site, and people want you to get rid of that? Because why is that?
Well, it's like either they're not coast to coast fans. There's like a vehement like attitude in Esoterica, especially like if you're a hardcore Esoteric fan, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
You know, then there's like a backlash against Coast to Coast AM because they're like mainstream, and I think that's part of it. And then part of it, just, you know, they're not getting what they want out of the program, and they're lashing out at it, and, you know, want me to not cover them and want to support me. You know what I mean? It's weird.
Yeah.
Like, you know, they're like, "Your show's great. Stop covering Coast to Coast." And it's like, dude, I'm like to throw back to what I said earlier, Coast to Coast is like WrestleMania, and I'm like, you know, at the National Guard Armory.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just one little dude. I mean, and they're like the big stage that you can't deny it. And I think, part of what we do for coverage is that no one is really doing what we do, is to say who was on and what they talked about and who's going to come up next week, so people who don't know or missed an episode or something like that can go back and check it out. If there was somebody else doing that, I probably never would have got into writing about Coast to Coast.
Doesn't Coast to Coast do that on their own site, though?
Yeah, but, you know, they also, well, they write their own previews and recaps and stuff, and sometimes if Nori says something kind of ridiculous or goofy, they're not going to remember it or see fit to print it. but if I notice it, I'll be like, "Oh, you're not going to believe what Nori said. He made some joke and it bombed horribly," and you know, something like that. So we're sort of like the website says, we're an off-kilter observer. We enjoy having a good laugh at the whole scene in general, pretty much.
Yeah, there's a couple things on there that said, you know, Sylvia Brown meltdown and what's it, Tim Biscardi meltdown. What the hell is that? I didn't hear these meltdowns. What were they? And what is that? Were people just freak out, or they don't know what to say anymore?
The Biscardi thing,
the Bigfoot thing.
We called it Biscardi Gate. That happened in late August of, I think, 2005.
Uh-huh.
Tom Biscardi, maybe 2006 now that I think about it. Tom Biscardi was on Coast to Coast over the summer of 2006. He had said he was going to be hunting Bigfoot. You could join his website and watch like his expedition to hunt the Bigfoot and stuff. And he was on Coast to Coast like every couple weeks, like with an update and always getting closer to the Bigfoot. It was exciting. I was excited because I'm a big Bigfoot fan.
Yeah.
So all of a sudden on
Me
a Friday
too.
Night, he's like, "We got the Bigfoot." Nori was, of course, astounded, and it was sort of like, if it were on the up and up, it would be monumental. So we sort of covered it in a tongue-in-cheek sort of way. We were like, you know, this guy is on the national radio, and he said Bigfoot's been captured. And then we wanted to follow it, and of course, he didn't have Bigfoot, and he became a big to-do. And then Nori really kind of stirred the pot, which was great, and had Lauren Coleman on to, like, chastise him and things, and the caller's yelling at him and stuff. It was a great, if you ever can get a chance to hear, you know, the ensuing few days of Coast to Coast AM after that, it was just hilarious in a train wreck sort of way. So that was the Biscardi gate.
What about,
And of course, the Sylvia Brown thing, she was on Coast to Coast, said she said she knew, I don't know if you remember now, the mining disaster in early January of 06, 07.
Off
with the dates tonight. January of 06, there was a mining disaster and all these miners were trapped, and Sylvia Brown was on the show that night, and I guess the news leaked that they were okay, and she was like, I knew they'd be okay. And then it turned out the news was wrong, and they were all dead, and then she was like, I knew they'd be all dead. And over the course of like an hour, Nori was like, what are you talking about? You, like an hour ago, you said they were going to be fine, and played it back, and it got all contentious, and she hasn't been on the show since. And it got a little national publicity, which is kind of rare for Coast to Coast, certainly not the kind they want, but humorous publicity, if you're like me, and you can laugh at when something crazy like that happens.
Yeah, it's funny. It's like the people that take it seriously, they seem to not care when that happens, or when, you know, Ed Dames makes a prediction, or Sean Morton makes a prediction, and none of them ever come true unless they're 50-50 propositions. But they keep listening, and the people, they keep, I don't understand it. It's like, well, I guess I do. I mean, you get so invested in a belief system that to admit that you're wrong, it's got, you know, well, that's about the worst thing in the world for anybody, to admit that they're wrong. And
yeah.
Even admitting it to yourself, like, oh, this person's full of shit. Maybe I shouldn't listen to them anymore, even though I've been hanging on their every word for the past, you know, 5 years. So, yeah, I see that. That's another thing I see a lot going on Coast to Coast. Maybe I didn't think it happened so much with Bell, but the thing was that when I first heard, you know, the first 6 or 8 years I was listening to it, I was just so fascinated that this kind of stuff would be on the radio that I almost didn't care. Although I still, you know, when Ed Dames or somebody came on, I'm like, okay, now what's he going to say?
Yeah.
You know, I don't know why they still keep having them on, because a lot of people listen and they're invested in it, and it gets advertising dollars and whatever. What do you think?
I think there's like certain, there's like a caste system almost of guests there, where like if a guy's been on forever and is, the more outlandish they are, even if they're wrong, I guess, it's a sort of charisma factor too that gets factored in. And like, I'm not a big Sean David Morton fan at all, really. I'm not a fan of his predictions or anything, but I will listen if he's on for an hour out of the three that he's on, you know, and just for kind of shits and giggles.
Yeah, of course.
To hear what kind of retarded stuff he's going to say. So that's like the only reason why I'd really, and so, you know, and if he's only going to be on once every 6 months, then I can stomach it. But then there's the middle of the line sort of predictors that I really won't even bother with. They're, you know, they're not superstar prognosticators. They're just like, you know, up and comers or has beens or never wases. And you know, there's a litany of those type of people. And when they're on, I'm just like, oh, this subject matter doesn't interest me, because, you know, there's so many predictors that there should be some way of, I don't know, feeding them all into a computer program and getting the right ones.
Yeah, speaking of feeding them all into a computer program, I noticed something else funny on your site. There's two of them. One, counters, counting how many times Richard Hoagland's been on Coast to Coast. What's that up to now, like 300 and something?
I think this year we're up to like, we're almost going to break 10 soon.
Break what?
So he's on a nice little hot streak, I think, to start the year out. It really peaked a couple of years ago when he was on like something like 50 times. And it really just sort of started as a larf between me and the guy who first started the website with me, Joe V.
Uh-huh.
He pops in from now and again to write for the site.
Right.
And he was, we just kind of laughed about how much he was on, and it sort of grew out of that. And as the more Hoagland came on, the more it got funny in a way. I don't know. It's weird like that.
Yeah, you know, I think Morton's on because he actually went to the same school I did and graduated with a degree in drama. So,
oh,
you,
really?
Yeah, you can see where he's coming from. He got a degree in theater arts from USC.
He's definitely an artist of some kind. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I did a lecture on the contactees as an unrecognized art movement. So, maybe Morton goes in there somewhere. Although I think the contactees were probably a little bit less, I don't know what the word is, slimy.
Yeah, I guess you could call them a performance bullshit artist, or a bullshit performance artist. One or the other. I'm not sure, but that may describe him. I'm sure he considers what he does to be part show.
Yeah, of course he does. You know what's funny is I was just talking to Rob Sterling today that runs the Conformist website.
Mm-hmm.
And he's, I don't know, a few years back he said that he had talked to Bill Cooper before, obviously before he died.
Yeah.
And he said that he got this weird feeling, this kind of smirk from Cooper that a lot of his shtick was a shtick. I mean,
yeah.
he believed a lot of it, but, you know, the freaking out and the, you know, we're being controlled and all that was basically to get people to listen to him. So, you know, there's a lot of that theater going on in the conspiracy and paranormal world, especially if you get in the media, and that's how you stay on, you know, how you come back as a guest. Certainly Richard Hoagland is good at working an audience, especially on the radio.
No, definitely. Actually, you raised an interesting character that I wanted to just say something about is Bill Cooper.
Yeah.
I'm terribly disappointed that I missed out on the Bill Cooper era, because I came into this all, you know, post-2001-ish, 2002, and by then he was gone. And I missed out on the insanity of Bill Cooper, so I only hope more Bill Coopers will come along.
Well, I hope so, too. I mean, he's one of a kind, but I don't see anybody really doing what he did. I mean, if Jordan Maxwell is a little bit more animated and insane, he might approach it, but it's it's a little different. You know what's funny is I was coming back from the I'm sorry I'm talking so much, but if you want to jump in and extemporaneize, that's fine.
Oh, don't worry about it. I'm having a good time. I think we're rolling. I think everything's rolling great.
Okay. I was coming back from the Laughlin convention this year. I went for like 2 days because I wanted to see a couple people speak and some friends were there and all that. But we were coming back through Baker, where the giant thermometer is. If you drive to Vegas, everybody knows what I'm talking about. And we went in the Denny's there to eat. I went with my friend Walter and his girlfriend. And we're sitting there, and Jordan Maxwell walked in.
Wow, cool.
Out of nowhere. I was like, that's Jordan Maxwell. And Walter's, who? What? And I said, I'm going to go over and say hi to him. And I went over, and I said, Jordan, how's it going? He goes, I thought that. Whoops. Drop the mic. He said, I thought that was you, you know, and so I sat down and talked to him for about 15 or 20 minutes. I guess he, like, came into some money recently, and he's moving to Vegas and going to keep up his research and all that, but he doesn't have to worry about, you know, whether he can make his car payment or whatever anymore. He just bought a new car, a nice shiny new Cadillac or something. And
awesome. I'm a huge Jordan Maxwell fan. I hope I can interview him sometime in the future, because this stuff's wild. And he's one of the guys, too, like, that I was talking to Paul about this, actually, before we were setting up the baseball thing.
Uh-huh.
And there's a lot of guests that, like, I want to have on the show that they have such a body of work that I'm almost intimidated by, like, how do you tackle a Bruce Maccabee? You know what I mean? Like, where do you start on just to do the research on somebody like that, or somebody who's written tons and tons of books, and Jordan Maxwell's been around forever, so.
Yeah.
He's somebody that I'd be like, oh, God, I'm going to interview Jordan Maxwell. Where do I start? Where do I end? All that, you know?
Well, you know what? When I interview people, I just start with, like, what the hell interests me about them? I don't, you know, I almost don't care about, well, we have to talk about this book and this book and this thing and this thing. It's like, what do I want to hear from this person? What do I want them to react to? Where the hell did they get this piece of information? Why do they believe it? And, you know, sort of challenge them a little bit, and also, yeah, maybe there's a certain point at which, when you don't prepare too well, you might get better stuff out of it. I learned that from listening to Art Bell, because when
I've had episodes like that. Don't let the sometimes polished approach fool you. But like I said, like kind of what you said, I like to at least be able to know what their specialization is, so I can find a niche that, like, maybe hasn't been explored yet.
Yeah, of course.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, of course. Because, well, if you're interested in somebody, you better do a little bit of background on them. Otherwise, you know. But I learned this with Art Bell. I've said this before. I came on, and he said, I said, would it be okay if Richard Doty came on? That I, you know, like about a day before? And he said, who's Richard Doty? So obviously, he hadn't read the book, didn't know who the guy was, didn't know what was going to happen. And look what happened with the show.
It was a great episode.
Yeah, he's a radio genius. I think, far better than anybody else right now doing stuff on broadcast like that. And I'm sorry that he doesn't do as much as he used to. I guess he's moved back to Pahrump, right?
Yeah, like the turn of the year, around the end of December or something like that.
Oh, he did move back. He moved back in December, you say?
Yeah.
With his child
bride? His weekend show has been really good, especially UFO-related, like since he came back to the States. Like through January, February, March, there were a ton of good UFO episodes.
Uh-huh.
So I felt like he was getting back into stride on that stuff.
So, I'm glad he's back. And if I ever get to be on that show again, I'm going to request. I was totally, I don't know if it was planned or what, but they said, do you want to come on with Art on Sunday? And this was on a Thursday. He's like, yes, yes, because I was afraid it was going to be Nori, and I would have to kind of lead him through the interview with things I wanted to say. But with Bell, it was just like, bam, 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 bam.
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. And if I could think of a cliffhanger, I would, to try and bring up, near the commercial, just to kind of help him out and get him excited. And it worked fine that way. But he's, he's total master of that medium and that subject matter. No matter what you think of him, personally or his opinions or anything, he knows how to do a radio interview and he knows how to keep people on. I bet they charge more for the commercial time when he's on.
I bet. I don't know. It'll be interesting to see.
Yeah.
The economics of Coast to Coast, I bet, is probably fascinating.
Yeah. Since we're both, we both do this interviewing stuff and, it's internet to be sure, but you just look to people like that or people that are storytellers on the radio. I listen to old radio shows with talk shows, and I listen to the old Long John Neville shows because they're incredible. Talking to contactees and all that from the 1960s, and he was on the radio in the 50s and 60s.
Yeah, yeah.
Have you heard any of those? Any of those Long John Neville? He was like the Art Bell of the 50s and 60s.
I've heard a lot about him, but I haven't heard anything from him. I've listened to a lot of contemporary esoteric radio, both to stay on top of what's going on in the field in general, and to stay on top of what other people are doing as far as like their style of show.
Yeah, exactly.
Break the mold as far as music and that kind of stuff, commercials, not having them, and all that fun stuff. So I listened to like Rents. I used to listen to Rents a lot, but I haven't really heard much from him in a while. Alex Jones, of course, I listened to.
Uh-huh.
I feel like those are the two big dogs in esoteric radio right now, more so Alex Jones than Jeff Rentz.
Well, Alex Jones is a showman. He's incredible at it.
Yeah, he's really, I'm just amazed at the meteoric rise of the whole Alex Jones operation. It's awesome. And then I listened to a lot of some of the other podcasts, like Paracast.
Uh-huh.
And Radio Mysterioso, obviously, Adam Go Rightly's Untamed Dimensions. I try to check out all these different shows,
that's
where you find guests, too, that, Coast to Coast hasn't featured yet, that you can bring on your show and people are going to appreciate.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I usually just wait till there's I get an idea or somebody emails me and say, hey, why don't we talk about this? Or, I hear something. It's like, this person really needs, or not really, really needs to be talked about. I really like to ask this person about 20 questions,
Yeah, yeah. That's kind of how the show, the Benal America show came about in a way, because it's hard to explain, but since we sort of like burst ourselves, we could make our own destiny in a way. We made a list of the guests. I made a list of the guests that I wanted to get and asked the staff, and it was like, who should we get on this show? And sort of could put it together from scratch in a way, which was a lot of fun because then, it wasn't like we just started a radio show and then we were like, oh shit, we need a guest for next week. It was like we taped them all right away and tried to get as many of the names as we can.
How many?
The show and people that we really want to ask the questions of.
Do you have like a regular schedule on the show? Does the podcast come out every week? I don't even know. It looks like over the past few years, it's kind of like whenever you can get the time to do it and the person is ready to do it, then you just do it on the phone. Because obviously you do recorded interviews and I do live ones, or I try to.
Yeah. Well, the idea is sort of to be different from like every other radio show out there is that we're like a TV show in a way, because we're the first season was Been All America Audio season one. We started in September, we wrapped it up in June, and then we took the summer off and season two started, and hopefully we'll take this summer off and we'll have season three for you next fall. So by doing it that way, then we keep that sort of TV element going on the production side, where we tape 6 episodes or 8 episodes in the summer. So when we start at the end of September, we have something for every Saturday for the next 2 months.
Oh, okay.
And then from there, you know, I can kind of relax for a couple of weeks, 3 weeks or something, and put together like the musical montages that we've been doing this season and plan the theme music and that stuff and do the research for the next batch of guests. Then we'll do another batch.
Right.
And like, we'll usually get through, this year we got through December pretty good and really didn't have any problems. And then, you know, I took like the month of January off and we just ran through all of February and March with new episodes. So we try to, I don't want to go get into a situation where, you know, I run an episode on a Saturday and the next thing you know, I don't have another one for anybody until like 2 weeks from then, because it's hard to pin somebody down for the interview or, you know, the computer crashed or something like that.
Right.
So we always sort of have in mind that we're going to present a certain, like a set of episodes. Definitely have a set for you. Like right now, we just put out the baseball special this weekend.
Uh-huh.
I'm taking 2 weeks off to collect the final batch of the season up to the season finale, and we'll roll them out starting on the 21st of April, and we'll have a fresh episode every Saturday until the season finale, which will be in the middle of June.
When you say finale, is that like with fireworks and everything, or is it just meaning
in
it's not just the last
because
one?
Because we try to make the season finale like worthy of being the season finale.
Yeah.
Last year we had for the season finale we had Gary McKinnon.
Uh-huh. Oh, yeah.
UK UFO hacker.
Uh-huh.
And he was a pretty huge name in the esoteric world, like, all through last year. And I thought that was, you know, a nice name to go out on a bang with for the season finale. So we're looking at, we have a very short list of potential people who could be the season finale. And these have to be, like, superstars, like supernovas, A-list guests, you know, like the best of the best, if you could absolutely have to get somebody, you know what I mean? That's when you save up the email addresses that people send you that are like, you know, here's so-and-so's email address, you know, and you're like, I better tuck that one away because I may need that when season finale time comes.
Right. You know, I'm going haphazardly in the questions I wrote down, but considering, you know, the kind of people you have on, do you have like a dream list of people you'd like to have on the show and why?
It's been tougher this season with the dream list, I guess, because, like, the initial list of guests was really the dream list, and a lot of them ended up coming on the show, which was, like, surprising. It took legwork to get some of them, but we did get, you know, if I would have to dig up the old original list, but I'd say of, like, the dozen that we originally had listed, we've probably got 10 of them who've been on the show at this point. So we're, like, running out of dream people, but if people like I haven't interviewed yet that I would like to, you know, like Nori, Bell, Ian Punnett would be great, Rance would be fascinating, Bill Moore, Jacques Vallée, you know, people who were like set the stage in early eras for different areas, you know, maybe if I could find some early cryptozoologists that are still around, that would be cool. And international type guests I really like. So we're on a hunt right now for like international ufologists. So if there's a Japanese ufologist out there or a Chinese one, Indian, French, any of those native, any of those nationalities, definitely get in touch with me because we'll bring you on the show.
Why don't you have Farah Yudozu on?
We did have Farah Yudozu on.
Oh, you did?
Ago.
Oh, okay. Never mind.
This year we've had Latin ufology with Scott Corrales, Italian ufology with Paula Harris, and Turkish ufology with Farah Yudozu.
Oh, okay.
And we're going to have a Canadian ufology guy soon, so we're trying to branch out.
Oh, very good. The other thing, you know what, when you mention that, I think of one of my other questions, or comments, actually, on the site is, of all your columnists on the site, I don't know how many you have, like five or something, three of them are women, which is pretty incredible for a UFO site.
I know, and I really, well, first of all, I'm glad you mentioned the staff, just to put them over, Michael Chiron Brun, Leslie Gruner, Regan Lee, Tina Senna, Ralph Molesworth, and Joe V, that's the great banalofamerica.com staff. When I started the website, I kind of wanted to have, like, something for every day, and I don't have the time, really, or the, I don't know, the diligence, I guess, to do a blog-style thing where I write every day.
Right.
And, you know, I wanted different voices.
It's a pain in the ass.
Strangely enough, and these people all came to the site over time, and it just sort of, strangely enough, we just all of a sudden added the third female writer. I don't know what it's all about. I don't really understand it. It's kind of strange. I think maybe it's just that I'm young, and one of the other writers is really, well, two of the writers are really young, too. So we try to fill niches that aren't out there. And maybe, you know, Tina Senna is a big fan of Regan and Leslie, and she's read their stuff at Banal America, so she kind of wants to come on board. So maybe, like, Leslie and Regan are setting the standard for more lady writers to come into the scene and write for esoteric websites, and then they end up coming to Banal America because, you know, that's where Leslie and Regan are. I don't know. But it's weird, and it's cool because I'm really all for more women in ufology and the esoteric and stuff like that, and they may have answers that we can't figure out yet. We need more people, like we were talking about on the baseball special. We need more black ufologists and ufologists of all shapes and sizes.
Yeah, is Tina Hispanic? Her last name sounds either Spanish or Hispanic name.
It's spelled S-E-N-A, so I'm not sure.
That sounds like a Spanish name to me.
I'll email her tomorrow and find out.
You've never seen her?
No, I've never seen, you know, it's really funny. I've never seen, other than pictures, I think Leslie has a picture up and Regan does, and actually Chiron does too, but of all the people who write for the website, I've only even talked to Leslie on the phone, and Chiron's been writing for the website for like 2.5 years. And I'm always like, a couple of times I've sent him my phone number, and I've been like, dude, just call me.
Yeah.
Like, and like, he'll respond to like every other part of the email, and like, conveniently, the part about like getting in touch with me, it gets no response. So I don't know. Maybe Chiron's frightened of me. It's a weird, like, technical world out there, and we have really a strong bond, me and the writers for Banal America, but some of them I've never talked to on the phone. But Tina Senna, actually, she's from Massachusetts. She's from right near me, so chances are we'll cross paths on some kind of adventure in the future.
Oh, okay. Yeah, you know what? When we were talking about the baseball thing the other day, you said, why are there no black people in ufology, and why aren't they at the conventions, and I thought about it later, what I said. It sounded like kind of a, you know, one of those. It sounded very unhip, what I said. I can't remember exactly what I said, but it's like, well, I think that by and large, they probably just feel uncomfortable coming to a convention with a whole bunch, you know, populated with old white people.
Yeah. Well, there's definitely that, and there's that old school mentality in ufology anyway, where, you know, newcomers in general are kind of like shunned, so I can imagine that, you know, the same goes for black wannabe ufologists, and they're probably maybe they don't want to put up with it as much more than, you know, somebody else. I don't know. It's strange in general. There's a predominantly white scene in the UFO scene, and
I really don't know what that's about.
It's really weird. It really came up like in November when somebody asked me the same question, and since then it's kind of like stuck in my brain. Where it's like, where are they? Well, yeah, what's going on here?
Where are minorities in ufology? I have no idea. And I don't know what that is, and I wish it would happen more. And then, you know, maybe it's just like the civil rights movement. First we have suffrage when the women start writing more. Then we'll have a civil rights movement when we get more, you know, people, not just black, but every other race in there doing, you know, American ufologists doing good work. Which leads me to another question. What do you think of the way you know, this is a big issue with me, but what do you think about ufology now? What's wrong with it? What's right with it? How do you think it can be changed? I've written about this on UFOmystic, but I'd like to hear some other people.
Oh, definitely. I've talked about it too in general, and it's weird because on my show I kind of have to dance around it. You know, I'm supportive of everything. I'm kind of like a cheerleader in a way, you know. So
yeah.
But I definitely have issues with contemporary ufology. It seems like it's spinning its wheels. I'm not impressed with this UFO flap. This is only my second interview ever, so
yeah.
On my first interview ever, somebody was like, that guy, he just sits on the fence and doesn't take a side, which is like, what are you talking about? I don't know what you mean. Like, you can't, I don't feel comfortable taking a side in the UFO debate on what it is. And I think that as far as what ufology is right now, there's all these different camps and factions, and I think they do need to, like, work together towards a common goal. So I'm not really going to be like, you know, I'm on this side or I'm on that side, or, you know, I kind of want everybody to, I would like it if the exopolitics folks and the old school ufologists and the new school people could at least come to some kind of agreement on, you know, what we ideally would like to see, you know, in the next 5 years. Which is a big problem, because we, you know, the nebulous idea of, well, we want the truth about UFOs, like, we've been asking for that for a while, and
yeah.
It's not happened, so...
Yeah, well, everybody has a different idea of what that truth is. Since they can't agree on it, it's like, well, our truth is the government knows everything and they should tell us, and, you know, our truth is that there's aliens here and the government can't do anything about it, and our truth is, you know, it's... And nobody... Everybody has a different goal. They want to prove, it seems like, that... There is something. There's people coming here from other planets. That's their common goal.
Yeah, they want to prove their theory.
Yeah,
and to hell with the other theories. So
yeah,
like why work together?
Yeah,
and,
it's like life of Brian.
You know,
in,
you know, that sort of like that interspecies or whatever feuds within esoteric. You know, ufology versus cryptozoology and you know, abduction people and ufology, some of them are in, some of them are out, and are they my labs, or are they real abductions? And it's like, you get these splinter groups upon splinter groups, and to go back to just the goals, you know, maybe, like, I threw this out there before, maybe if we just pushed for, like, open congressional hearings, you know, one more time around, we could call it.
Yeah.
One more time around, we'll have open congressional hearings. And if everybody pushed for it for a long time, maybe it would work. Or, you know, like we were talking before, in the past, you know, how about a new Brookings findings? You know, let's find a think tank and get them to give us, you know, do a serious look at the UFO thing from a fresh perspective. Or, you know, maybe as a goal, let's try and get to this certain amount of money raised to study UFOs via grants. Or I don't know, a goal would be nice from all of these groups. And you don't really see that ever happening.
The thing that really kind of irritates me is it goes back to what we were talking about a couple minutes ago, where everybody has an answer, and even before that, where you said people would say, "Well, he's sitting on the fence; he doesn't want to." You know, he doesn't want. It's like there's this problem with you have to make up your mind about something, and unfortunately,
exactly.
Unfortunately, in the UFO field, since it's so marginalized anyway. What do they make their minds up about, and how can they stick to that? When you were talking, I almost interrupted you. It's like the thing in Life of Brian, the Monty Python film, where all these factions all hate the Romans, but they hate each other so much that they can't do anything about the Romans being there in Israel in you know, the year 30 or whatever it is.
Exactly. Well.
They hate each other more than they hate the people they're fighting against.
What's that?
They hate each other more than the people they hate the people that they're supposedly fighting against.
Yeah, well, they've been like they've been so fruitless in their attempts to get the UFO secret that now they're like blaming each other, and you know, they need to refocus themselves on you know, the task at hand, I think. And I think you're right in the sense now that there's this like heady pro-choice, pro-life, you know, what side are you on in ufology thing going on. I've noticed it a lot in the last year, especially.
What do you
mean? ETH.
Oh,
I've
yeah.
been hearing ETH more than like any three letters since there's the new SERPO.
Yeah.
Like, I've heard of the extraterrestrial hypothesis and that line of thinking, but now it's like it's got a name, and there's like these competing theories, and it's like, wow, all of a sudden now people want you to join up on a side, and it's like, I hate to break it to you, but it's probably like a myriad of choices and percentages, and, you know, a certain percentage are ETH and a certain percentage are, you know, a nut with a flashlight. And some of them are, you know, government test craft, and some of them are time travelers or interdimensional things or who knows what, you know, accidental UFO, like it'll streak through and it's in and out and that's it, you know. They're not visiting, they're just passing through, and
yeah,
crypto-terrestrials. It's like it's probably a huge mix of all these different things, and you know, to pick one, it's, you know, eventually even, like, there's going to be something that disproves that one. It's kind of like the sleep paralysis abduction thing.
Yeah.
It's going to be like, well, if it was extraterrestrials, how come, you know, I saw them fly out of the lake and into a little bubble thing at the bottom of the lake, you know, well, I guess it's extraterrestrial that's been living here.
Yeah.
Now, I was thinking of that the other day. Would an extraterrestrial, let's say they came to Earth, right?
Yeah.
And settled here after a couple generations, would the third generation ET still be an ET, or would he be an Earthling? He would, you know, he'd be a different creature, obviously. That would be a good idea for a movie, I think.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be Man of Fell to Earth Part 3 and 4. And you know. The only reason that I come on and say these damn ETHers every time is because, like you said, they're stuck in one thing. It seems that people that aren't ETHers, with the exception of, you know, rabid frothing at the mouth people, they're willing to accept that as one model. But the people that are pro-ETH seem to say that that is the only model, and that's all the evidence points to, you know?
I haven't really run into, like, aside from that dude that wanted me to take sides, I haven't really, like, run into, like, anyone, like, a vehement ETHer. Maybe I haven't asked, like, the right questions, I guess, of the guests or something. I don't know, but...
Well, it's like a brain worm, you know? It's like if you talk to Jerry Clark or Stanton Friedman or whatever, they're going to say, well, there's not really any evidence for anything else. You know, they're not going to beat you over the head with it. But, well, Stan's a little bit different. He's willing to listen, but he's pretty much made up his mind based on what he's seen. And he's seen and heard and researched and all these things that we can never even imagine. So maybe he has more evidence than we do, but I'm still waiting for him to present it. However, it goes back to this thing of having to be right and having to take a side and all this. And it's like, well, if you can't take a side, there's something wrong and nobody's going to want to listen to you, which unfortunately is the way that the media and radio and all that work. You have to have a point of view and stick to it and not equivocate, or nobody wants to hear from you.
Yeah, I think so. But there's also a good, like, at least in the esoteric media, I've found that people appreciate the fact that I don't have an agenda in a way, because a lot of shows do kind of have an agenda, or they're like super, you know, they're fighting the powers that be, and they want us to know that and that kind of thing. And with us, you know, it's sort of like we're just a radio show, and I'm trying to figure it out as much as the listener is.
Right.
And so... And I'm not like, once the guest's gone, I'm going to have another guest on that might have a totally different point of view. And you know, it's kind of like, well, which one's telling the truth? Which one am I going to believe? You know, I got to go do my own research and that kind of thing. I find it, like, ridiculous to take sides unless it's, like, a serious sort of issue in a sense, like, you know, or a completely loony theory. You know, either one of those, I'll be happy to take a side. But, you know, stuff like UFOs. The sides, there is no sides. It's round.
Yeah.
It's completely enigmatic, which is the whole appeal to it. That's why it is the crown jewel. You know, Bigfoot can't be the crown jewel because, you know, it's either real or not, or maybe like an alien. You know, you only have like three options with the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But with UFOs, it could be all kinds of sorts of things, and that's what's really, I guess, most appealing about the whole thing.
Yeah, well, it depends on what your definition of real is, and that's another thing that people can't seem to agree on, I guess. Or if they do, it's, you know, it most people are brought up, you know, it's yes or no, it's real or it's not real. It's you're on this side or this side, and it's really hard to get out of that mindset. So, you know, I almost don't blame a lot of people, but I do blame them for being adults and not being able to see that, especially with UFOs and the paranormal. Like you said, it's multifaceted. So why not look at all these facets? Because if you just look at one, you know, you're like the people with the three blind people with the elephant.
Exactly. So that's kind of why I say, you know, bring these UFO people together. In a sense, I would like to see them come to some kind of agreement, but they don't. They just don't. And you know, I've thrown that out there. You know, well, like Paul Kimball's really anti-exo politics, and I can see some of his arguments, but at the same time, I'm in favor of a proactive approach. I'm in favor of, you know, an activist sort of approach to the UFO question.
Right.
So I can see the merits in the exo politics movement. Now, I don't, you know, they have a lot of problems. I'm not going to lie. I mean, I'm not a huge fan of the Barney Fife-Symington story that's going around right now.
We'll talk about that.
What's that?
We'll talk about that in a bit.
I hope so, because I have a very strong opinion on Barney Fife Symington. So, but you know, I think so. There's problems with the Yes to Politics movement, but in spirit, at heart, it's a great idea, and I'm all for it. And I'm all for, like, you know, collecting evidence. But at the same time, I feel like this collection of evidence thing's really kind of growing long in the tooth.
Yeah.
And I'm not, you know, what, like that old joke about where you're going to back the where do you want me to back the truck up or whatever when they ask for the evidence. It's like, we've got enough evidence. Let's do something with that. I'm excited about what MUFON's talking about doing with all these big plans and stuff like that. So maybe, you know, maybe that old school's going to come around to a more proactive approach. But I guess maybe the word is proactive. I'd like to see, you know, everybody sort of come to some kind of conclusion and work of working together.
Right. What is MUFON doing? Are they going through their old files and doing an analysis of them or something now?
Yeah, they're doing like some analysis. They've computerized all their old files and they're going to be working with all those, and they're going to have like some kind of like every year they're going to tackle. Actually, this kind of goes back to what we've been talking about. Every year they're going to tackle a different reasoning behind the UFO phenomenon, and of course this year will be the ETH.
Yeah.
Hypothesis.
Fine.
And they're going to have like a closed door weekend retreat with big names in ufology, I guess. I think they already had it in February, but I haven't heard. It's like secretive.
Yeah.
Like Stonecutters on The Simpsons, I think.
Yeah, exactly.
So they're going to, and then they're going to present their findings at the MUFON symposium in July. So that'll be exciting. And then I guess next year they're going to tackle some other aspect of the UFO phenomenon. Maybe what, I don't know what the other. You know, I doubt they'd do crypto-terrestrial this soon, so maybe they'd do, like, time travel or interdimensional or something like that. But that's what they're planning on doing, so I'd like to see that. And their new director is, talking about kind of like the same thing I am, at least, in that, you know, we got all this evidence, let's try and figure something out of it at this point.
Right, exactly. Who is it? Chris O'Brien told me that the people that are sitting on all the old APRO files, Aerial Phenomena Research Organization. I guess they've got in some temperature climate controlled storage facility in Phoenix, and they're looking to try and find some way to get all those old files and all that data computerized and put on the net so people can use it, I think for free. And they're just, you know, they've got slight money problems, but they're real estate people, so they have some money. But mostly it's, you know, they need sweat and time for people to put all this stuff together for them. So if anybody's listening and knows how to put together a database and is willing to put some time into it, I think those people would be interested to talk to you. I thought they were just sitting on it, but apparently they want to do something with it. At least Chris says so.
And these are the infamous APRO documents?
Yeah, files, yeah. From
The long-time listeners to my show know that I'm just a diehard APRO files fan, even though it's like such a niche story in ufology. But I've always found it fascinating that they just disappeared. So they've reemerged, in other words.
Yeah, I asked Chris about that. I went to Sedona a few months ago, and we were hanging out, and I said, hey, Chris, you know, I was complaining about the APRO files. And he goes, oh, I know those people that have that. What? Huh? He said, yeah, like I just said, it's a couple in Phoenix. I guess were given, willed, or something, all the files by Jim and Coral Lorenzen, and I thought they were sitting on them and being, you know, kind of, these are ours and nobody gets to see them, which did nobody any good. He goes, no, they want people to see them. They just want to get them in a form where the most amount of people can see them in the easiest way. And since, you know, the internet wasn't, when Coral Lorenzen finally died, I think she died a year after her husband in, what, like 93 or something? They didn't have that available to them, and now it's, you know, it's, you know, wide open for a online database. So
yeah,
apparently that's what they want to do.
That's cool. I'm happy to hear that, at least, because I was always kind of fascinated by how they just disappeared off the face of the earth. You'll have to put me in touch with them. Maybe I'll write an article about the story of the APRO documents.
Sure. Apparently Chris O'Brien knows them. This Fife Symington thing. I said it sounded like his name sounds like some sort of joke from a movie about prep schools or something, but.
Whoa! Yeah, he does sound kind of like the stuffy dean you'd expect on like an Animal House movie, a knockoff.
Yeah.
I'm really.
Why don't you background people a little bit who might not know about this story? It has to do with the Phoenix Lights.
Yeah, well, apparently, I'll be honest. After it's taken a little permutation life of its own since it broke last week. So yeah. I'm only I'm perfectly aware at this point because it's been going on now in a fever pitch. But the gist of it is apparently the news broke that Fife Symington gave an interview for a movie called Out of the Blue that's coming out again on a re-release on DVD or something like that. And in the interview, Fife Symington, who was the governor of Arizona during the Phoenix Lights, said that he did see the Phoenix Lights when he was governor and didn't tell anybody. And, of course, he's notorious in UFO circles for having the big press conference with a little alien that came out, and he was like, this is the source of the Phoenix Lights.
Right.
So the news broke like a couple of weeks ago or like last Friday or something from somebody who was from someone who's involved with the film or friends with people who made the film. And then all of a sudden it became like super huge news in the mainstream world for a week or two, like the O'Hare story. And
right.
Fife, as I like to call him, Barney Fife, he gave an interview on CNN, and then, I'm in the radio business tangentially, so, I contacted the people involved with this story and was like, hey, is Fife Symington giving any other interviews, He's talking big stuff here. Let's get him on All of America. So then I was told, we're not, Fife is not doing any interviews till after Out of the Blue comes out on DVD. So then he showed up on Coast to Coast last week. This past Friday, actually, like 2 days ago, with the people who made the movie. So I'm kind of a little put off by the whole chain of events that have gone down here with the Fife Symington story. But that's the Fife Symington story. He claims he saw a UFO. Now he's coming clean and telling everyone. And he'll be telling everyone more on the DVD, which is, which reeks to me of publicity stunt.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, if there's any way to get serious people to turn away from you, you can do exactly what he did, which is, his political career is over. So to keep in the spotlight somehow, wave some money in front of him or whatever. Suddenly now he saw the UFOs. He saw the Phoenix Lights. He saw the big triangular thing. But he chose to make fun of it back then for who knows what reason. And a lot of people have guessed, and the same thing I have guessed, which is, two things. One, probably somebody told him to shut up about it, which might not be my number one reason. And two, he wanted to save his political ass by making fun of it.
Yeah. And what really annoys me, in a way, is, like, it's just, first of all, I haven't really followed the mood of the UFO scene with regards to the story since it just sort of broke. But at least as far as Leslie, who writes for my site, mirrored pretty much what I said, which is like, too little, too late, dude. I'm really disappointed that he's even coming out to say this. It's like, what good are you doing us now? Your own cowardice screwed us.
Yeah.
Like, don't expect me to hail you as some kind of hero because now you're saying that you did see something. Like, and it's almost like a sad story to me because this guy could have, like, changed, really made change, We're talking like, if he could have started the ball rolling on something big, if he had really made some noise about this UFO he saw, but he didn't, and now he's a nobody. He's just some guy that nobody's ever heard of that's coming out of the woodwork. Oh, he was the governor of Arizona, but if he had made a big stand about it, chances are we wouldn't have forgotten who he was. He might be hailed as some kind of hero 10 years after the Phoenix Lights if he had made a big enough stink that we got those congressional hearings. Or, we got some kind of investigation, but he didn't. So, it's sad because he squandered an opportunity to, like, really make history, which is really what you're supposed to do, I guess, if you're going to be a politician. You want to, like, get on a coin and that kind of thing. He could have really been a trendsetter and broken ground, but instead he was a coward. I mean, let's be honest. And he didn't step up to the plate when the human race needed him, unless, he was told by the government not to do anything. But at least now, then say that.
Yeah.
Just don't be like, well, I didn't want to scare people, so I made fun of them. It's like, oh, thanks. Nothing
yeah, exactly.
Like when you're scared, like nothing when you're really scared and then have someone laugh at you right afterwards. Like, isn't that the worst? Like, they're not scared of something, you see a mouse and you're like, oh, shit, hide me. And then they're all laughing at you.
Yeah.
Like, it's double the humiliation of the whole experience. It's like, if the people weren't traumatized enough, then the government came out and laughed at them. And now, after the fact, it's like, guess what? You know, we knew you were telling the truth, because I saw the same thing, too. But I figured if I laughed at you, you know, everyone would kind of shut up about it, and we could all get on with our lives. It's like, dude, thanks. Thanks not only for being a wimp, but also for shitting all over everybody who saw something.
So right.
that's my opinion on Barney Fife's Armington. I'd like to have him on Banal of America, because I would say this kind of thing to him, you know?
Yeah.
I'd be like, dude, what happened? You squandered, like, the opportunity of a lifetime. Did you ever think about that? Do you ever think that you squandered the opportunity to, like, change the course of human history at all, possibly?
Well, you know? I don't
and
think...
Like, I'd like to hear his opinion on that. You know, maybe he hadn't thought about that, or maybe it eats him alive, you know? But either way, I'd like to hear his take on that. Instead of just, you know, for the 14th time, why did you bring the little alien out? It's like, we heard that, you know, you didn't want to scare people and,
right.
And you know, whatever. We've heard that part of the story already.
I didn't give out the phone number, but somebody's already calling. I'm just going to let that ring, and they can
look
call
at this,
back.
Dude. I've been pushing the phone calls a lot the past week at the website, and on my message board, I have a secret contest where if the message board member calls in and says their name, then they get a T-shirt, so...
Oh, well, maybe I better answer it then. Oh, it stopped ringing. Oh, there it goes. Just a sec. Oh, hey, Paul, just a second. I'll get you on.
Oh,
you can hear me, can't you? Yeah, it's Paul. Let me see if the phone thing's working. Are you there, Paul?
I'm still here.
Oh, okay. It's Paul Kimball, who was on last week. How more incestuous can you get?
I know.
Yeah, did you have something you wanted to throw at Tim here?
You cheesy bastards. No, I was just listening to the Symington thing, which to me is a big non-story. But I would raise one thing that I'd point out to you, that when the Phoenix Lights thing went down in 1997, Symington was under indictment by a federal grand jury
right. On
multiple counts of fraud and extortion,
uh-huh.
for which he was convicted in September of 97, later overturned on appeal because of a technical issue, and then Clinton pardoned him in the big
right. Pardon
fest that he had when he left office in 2001. Uh-huh. But one possible explanation for why Symington in 1997 wouldn't want to have anything to do with talking about the Phoenix Lights incident in any way other than in a humorous way would be because he was under indictment by a federal grand jury. And you tend not to want to make yourself look even more ridiculous, at least in their eyes, by coming out in favor of some UFO story at the same time as you're under indictment by a federal grand jury.
I wasn't aware of the timeline there. I thought that had happened at a different time, but you're right. Yeah, I mean, there's so many things he was doing to try and save his own ass that I don't think becoming a hero for ufology and humanity was anywhere near the top of his list.
Yeah, no, I frankly, I think he probably thought of it as just something he had to do because it was a big story, so I have to go out and do something. And the little guy in the alien suit, you know, absolutely a bad move. But I would be careful about calling Symington, as I've heard some people do, sort of cowardly for what he did. I mean, the guy did win a Bronze Star in Vietnam. He's not exactly a guy that I would call a coward, certainly probably not to his face. He certainly has credibility problems because
of
the criminal stuff.
I guess,
I
call him a coward in retrospect to the Phoenix Lights story. I don't know anything about him prior to that, and that's what he's coming out to speak on now. So, if he's going to come out and say that's what he did, then... I don't know. That's my opinion on what he got. I don't know. I'm kind of put off, but I guess I do think it was cowardly to do.
Yeah, on this one issue.
And you know, I just thought he should man up to what happened in the situation. And I understand that he has to cover his ass and all that good stuff, but at the same time, you know, you got to have a responsibility in the job, unfortunately. Maybe I'm an idealist.
Yeah, I know you are. I would just say that, you know, as Greg said, I think there was a whole bunch of other things, not the least of which was his job as governor, but also his own personal troubles going on around him at that particular time, that I have absolutely no doubt that ufology was so far down. It wasn't even on his radar screen, I would guess. And, you know, maybe it is now for any one of a number of different reasons. But like anybody else, and I'll let you guys go back to your talk, love the show, you guys enjoying listening to this, but like anyone else, any witness or anybody who says anything, I think you have to look at their overall credibility, their overall record. And Symington's no different. So you have to weigh that one incident in 1997 with the press conference with his overall record, the criminal conviction, but also his meritorious war service in Vietnam, and try and come at the end of the day to figure out whether he's a credible guy telling a credible story. That's
yeah,
my thing.
And just to and additionally, I guess even if he didn't have to go to the extremes of like taking some crazy stand on the UFO thing, maybe just the whole press conference thing. Like maybe he shouldn't have done that. Maybe that was, you know, not cool. If he had said nothing, I'd rather if he had seen the UFO and said nothing or done nothing than done a negative action. Do you know what I mean? It wasn't like, I would have preferred the positive one. Obviously, that's pretty unlikely. But instead, he took the negative tact on it, which hurt the whole thing more than if he had done nothing. So, you know, maybe if he had just been like, even though it was a big news story and he had to say something, I would have appreciated it if he had done something, done it in a way that, you know, didn't hurt all the people who saw stuff or all the people who obviously knew something was going on.
I agree. But, you know, everybody makes mistakes. So if he comes out in this documentary, and I agree the timing, 10 years on, and he finally comes out and says he saw it, it's a bit suspicious from a commercial point of view. But if he comes out and says, look, I just made a mistake, that was a bad call on my part, he wouldn't be the first politician to make a bad judgment. So that might have been one of his mistakes. But it would be nice to hear him say that. So
yeah, and I'll obviously go on to say that I know, like I said, Symington was on Coast to Coast on Friday. I haven't even heard any interviews with him. I've only been following the story like tangentially because I try not to get married into these stories because they get overblown in a lot of ways, like the Paul Hellyer thing. And you know, I don't want to like be like this is it. We're gonna break through. And I find myself jaded in general to the whole coming out politician situation with the UFO story. So I haven't heard what he specifically said about it, but also I think the just lack of availability, too, makes it all seem sort of, like, annoying to me.
Well, at the end of the day, it's really a non-story because all he is, assuming he's what he's saying is true, is he saw what other people saw. And so it only adds one more witness onto the pile, and then you're still left with the same question. Well, what did they see? Were it flares or aliens or whatever?
Yeah,
so,
well,
you know, it's a good thing, I suppose, to tie in for the 10th year anniversary. But other than that, he's no more credible or less credible than anybody else just because he was a governor. It's just, as you say with Hellyer, it's a name that people sometimes latch on to.
Right.
Anyway, I'll let you guys get back to talking. Love the baseball show, though, Tim. That was well done. Good work.
Thank you very much.
Although, between you and I think we can both agree that Bishop, as a Dodgers fan, is out to lunch. But, you know, what can you do?
The MK Ultra thing, I'm telling you. I think Go Redley might be on something.
Yeah, well, wait till the postseason comes up, and then we'll talk again.
Go Sox! See you later, guys.
There you go.
All right, thanks, Paul. Yeah, well, you know, like I said when we were doing that baseball show, I don't like to get into fan arguments with people because it just seems like that, you know, I should be sitting in a bar with a beer with a bunch of brainless idiots, you know, arguing whether, you know, who's gonna do what. To me, it's like arguing, you know, can Batman beat up Superman? I don't really care. I'd rather just watch the damn game and see what goes on and see the beauty of a double play or a perfectly executed, you know, suicide squeeze or something like that. That excites me a lot more than arguing with some dipshit over whether some team's better than the other.
Yeah, you know, well, that, to some people, that's like their whole life, I guess, and that's their ETH.
It's pathetic. It's absolutely pathetic, and anytime I even get near it, it just repels me like oil and water. I mean, I suppose if I knew more about other teams, I'd have a little bit more to say. But this is a UFO interview, so let's. If you want to hear more about baseball and UFOs, go to Tim's site. Go to binalofamerica.com and look up the baseball show. I noticed that in Tina's column, she mentioned Stan Friedman, Paul, and Adam, but not me.
What do you mean? Who's
Tina Sana's site? Her blog spot.
Oh, she plugged the interview. She didn't mention you.
Yeah.
Oh no! I'll have to when I find out if she's Latin or not, I'll have to make sure to chastise her for not crediting Bishop.
Oh, that's okay. It was fun doing that show.
It was a lot of fun. I think it came out more like what we're doing here, and sort of a mix of all different sort of topics instead of you know, just baseball. I was afraid people would turn it down because it's baseball, but it's a good mix, I think.
Well, it's just like, you know, you get together with people that are, you know, sort of interested in or very much interested in one subject. And, you know, with a radio show or in a conversation, after a while, people want to hear other stuff. I don't mind hearing a baseball show, even if I wasn't interested in it. If you had a football show, I'd have listened to it. You know, even though I can't stand football, but I want to hear a ufologist talking about football, because they're going to talk about the stuff you want to hear, too, a little bit. There's no way around it, because you aren't sitting there going, nope, we can't talk about that. We have to just talk about baseball. And that's what made it
exactly.
You know, that's
what
made
it
fun. I
tried to find the right mix on the whole thing, so it worked out well. We ended up getting into stuff that we hadn't really ever talked about before, like the black people in ufology type of thing. And,
right.
And, you know, post-game ufology, what's going to happen if the secret does come out? Well, what's everybody going to do after that?
Yeah, what secret?
Exactly.
Which secret are we talking about here? My secret, your secret.
Who's piloting these UFOs, or where they come from, I guess. I don't know. Will ufology ever get to close shop, or will it always just be one secret after another, I guess?
Yeah, well, it's the nature of what the phenomenon is. As soon as you pin it down to something, it's, you know, you squeeze it, and it squeezes out from your fingers, and you're left with a tiny little pinprick of your little theory that's been proven, and then, you know, 3,000 other things that don't apply. And I think, you know, if somebody gets the answer, that's only going to be one answer. It'd be nice, though, because you said, you know, why don't all these factions work towards one thing? Let's just get one little thing pinned on, and you've got a toehold there. As it is now, there's no toehold. I mean, that's why Symington can bring out a little alien and guy dressed in an alien suit, and everybody laughs, especially in the press, with their cynicism, and just writes it off, which is terrible. But if there's one little toehold that makes a segment of society, you know, the opinion making segment of society, be it the media or academia or whatever, take it seriously, then a lot of stuff could follow from that. So I think you're right in the, you know, agree on something and let's work towards that.
Yeah, I mean, and like now Paul's made me all self-conscious, like maybe I was too hard on Symington, but at the same time I kind of feel that way, and he probably doesn't, Symington obviously doesn't have as much of a passion about the UFO enigma as I do, but I hate to see that kind of opportunity squandered, really, is what gets my goat about the whole Symington story. You know, I just hate to see that whole, like I said, I hate to see that whole opportunity squandered, and then you have to pin the blame on Symington because the ball was in his court to do something about it, irregardless of his past history, you know?
Yeah.
I'm sure he's a great American and did a great job, you know, serving America. But when it came time to, you know, do something about the UFO thing, he didn't. And that's what I'm interested in.
Yeah, I mean, you can say, it's like, well, he's a Vietnam veteran and he was decorated. And it's like, well, that's nice, but If he basically lies, covers up for it, and then admits later that he was lying to basically cover his ass, that doesn't sound like, you know, having bullets shot over your head is a little different, I think. I mean, you can show fortitude and courage and all that there, no problem. There's plenty of people in the military that are completely nuts and unreliable, but they're great soldiers.
Exactly. So, you know, I feel like Paul made me, he awakened the Catholic in me now. I feel all guilty. But, you know, I guess that's just the way I feel. And, you know, I don't mean cowardly in a mean sort of way, but in the same time, I think in the circumstances of that, yes, I do mean it.
Well, I don't have any problem agreeing with you. I said the same thing on the UFO Mystic site.
But I think that does speak to a larger problem that I've been thinking of lately, too, is that, you know, we kind of need that domino effect where we need someone to stand up and say something of importance, not like you or me. We're important in the field, I guess, but I've been talking about, the best example I've been thinking about a lot lately is this Dan Aykroyd thing. If he's such a pro-UFO dude and he knows all these people in Hollywood, you know, how come we haven't seen more people in Hollywood, you know, step up to the plate and endorse UFO interest, you know? Maybe if we had more, if he could sort of grease the wheels of other people coming out and saying, you know, I'm in favor of looking into this UFO thing, it could get the ball rolling on, like, a change in public opinion.
Yeah, but you know what? I bet if he tried, the only question would be is, how much money can we make on producing your little project here?
Yeah, but, you know, UFOs are strangely enough, for like the people who have the money and you know, like the TV networks and stuff that sell the ad time and everything, I think the UFO phenomenon does generate a lot of money. So they'd probably be able to find a way to make a lot of money off UFOs. The people like you and me who are sort of doing this as a passion, you know, we'll be screwed out. We'll be squeezed out of the big pieces of the pie. But if it became a big thing, I'm sure that, you know, the powers that be in the media world would definitely be all over ways to make money off of it.
Yeah, well, and maybe you would hope so.
And maybe that would be what you'd have to do, is to try and convince them, you know, if we could get this public sentiment going, then, you know, then UFOs, we could make public interest in UFOs big money. Who knows?
Oh, yeah, right. Get people in the movie industry to take a chance on something, creating a craze so that they could ride the crest of it. Nobody does that. You realize how many stupid, ridiculous sequels there are. You know, well, you know, and what happened with Close Encounters? Nothing happened after that. There was a huge public interest in UFOs for about a year or two after that, and then it went in the toilet again.
Yeah, but I'm not saying make a movie. I'm saying, you know, just make it like a publicly aware, almost try and make it an acceptable, like thing. You know, we need a ribbon. It's kind of like the way you put it, I guess. You know, we need like a little UFO pin that's like we can get the celebrities to wear and be like, I'm down with UFO research. If we had that going on, you know, maybe that would change the public sentiment a little bit. You kind of see that going on in the 9/11 thing now.
Yeah.
So if we could harness that idea, it might help out the UFO scene.
Yeah. Well, the reason it happens in the 9/11 thing is all the causes and things that people in Hollywood go for, it has to do with a humanitarian thing where there's a problem and people are getting killed, screwed, whatever. And it's a human problem that needs some attention. Whether they can raise consciousness and do it successfully or not is a different matter. But like I said on the site a bunch of times, and when I've written, it's like, well, when the UFO problem or question or whatever is something that affects people on a daily basis and is concerned with human survival and all that in a concrete way, I think then more people will care about it, which is why I don't see much hope for the subject getting much attention. And then the other thing I said was that, well, what if we do find out that they're real? Everybody will freak out for about a year or two and then realize that the world isn't really any different than it was on a day-to-day basis, and then everybody will just kind of accept it and not care again. Not care as, you know, care a lot more than they did, but, you know, the craze will die down. People can get used to bombs dropping around them, which is why I say this.
So do you think we should have, like, Angelina Jolie adopt a hybrid baby?
I think that would be great.
That might be the breakthrough we're looking for. But I know, I see what you mean. Well, I don't know. I mean, I think that things would really change a lot if it's really hard to speculate because the UFO enigma is so varied. It could be anything that, you know, it could turn out to be not even that cool after all. It could be like, yeah, the aliens, we're like a rest stop for the aliens, and they have no interest in us and they don't want anything to do with us or anything. So mind your own business and that's it.
Yeah, well,
so I don't know, but I'd like to think that, you know, if we could, if the aliens were real or the crypto-terrestrials or whoever, I'd like to think if somebody has some advanced technology that it could somehow help us here on Earth, as long as we weren't going to blow ourselves up, which is, of course, the crux of the whole problem in a lot of ways.
No, we got to change our way of the way most people look at reality and the way it's taught and the way we agree on it before we can even begin to see what the UFO question is on its own terms. I don't see that happening for quite a while. In fact, if they announced that aliens are coming from another planet and all that, I think that would freak people out and make a big, you know, that would cause a lot of panic for a while. But if they, if somebody in authority said, we don't know quite what it is, it seems to be able to change its appearance and the way it does things and the way it appears to us, depending on our point of view and our preconceptions of it and all that, you know, That's not something you explain to people, most people, in a way that would make them say, yeah, oh, okay, because that's what I think it is.
Yeah, that's the hard part to get over, because a lot of Americans are really kind of dumb and stuff and really in their own little bubble world. So I guess you'd have to make it, like, relevant to them in a way, and it's going to be impossible to educate them to that new science. So
right.
It may take a while to It might be a generational thing. I've always thought this UFO thing is a generational thing in a way, because, you know, by the time I'm only 28, by the time somebody my age is president, there's probably a good chance they're going to be more sympathetic to looking into the UFO's secret than someone who's in charge right now.
Right, exactly. I hope so. I didn't give out the phone number yet, but now we got half an hour left, so I want to do that. 213-252-0998 if you want to talk to, question, chastise our guest, Tim Benall, here. 213-252-0998, and we'll put you on the radio. You know what? Everything we've talked about. Oh, you know what? I did have another question. It's we haven't covered yet. The show like yours and your website and all the people that are writing for it, including the women, which I think is great. It's like this democratization of UFO info. Do you think that's a good thing? I mean, there's good and bad things. Just a second. We are getting a call.
Shall I get the phone?
Yeah, keep talking. Go ahead.
All right. Absolutely. I think, you know, we, I'm distracted now by you answering the phone in the background. Yeah, well, we want to give the voice at the website to, like, the average person and the average sort of researcher and people who are like me, who I know are definitely on the up and up and are real searchers for the truth. And I think that's important. And I think just this whole blogosphere world has given rise to, like, a democratic voice of research in a way.
Yeah, some people are, you know, there was a comment put up somewhere saying, you know, the blog phenomenon is ruining the UFO subject. I think it's doing exactly the opposite. The point is that you have to actually look for these things on your own. We do have a caller. His name is Chris. And are you there, Chris?
Yeah. Sorry.
Do you have a question? You can say whatever you want on here. Do you have a question for Tim Benall?
You know, one thing that wasn't mentioned really well was the UFOV. The forums where, you know, it's pretty much more like it's like people just getting together, having a drink, and, you know, just talking about whatever's on their mind.
What is? You mean the blog stuff?
The forums.
Oh, yeah.
Is he from my forum, or is he just a caller?
I'm from it.
What's your name? I stay sober for this.
Well, Primus, I stay sober for this.
Oh, is it? His online name is Primus, he says.
All right, Primus, you just want a T-shirt.
But
I think, well, let me just jump on what Primus said, because he's all wired up from WrestleMania. I know he was telling me earlier today on the board.
Oh, okay.
Happy WrestleMania and opening day. You know, someone can put out a theory. Like, I was talking to Mac Tonies about this on the show, you know. That crypto-terrestrial hypothesis is growing and changing and evolving before our eyes. And, like, you and me and Kimball can sort of throw something else in there and be like, you know, well, have you thought about this? And then the theory can get kind of tweaked. And before, you know, somebody with a theory or someone with a way of thinking would have to really vet those opinions with other researchers, like at conferences or phone calls, and just that the rapid changing of opinion, really. Not just information, not just news, but also the exchange of opinion that's been changed so fast and rapidly helps, you know, the investigations grow.
Chris, did you have something else you wanted to ask Tim or talk about?
Yeah, it was about the sighting of whatever it was a couple of months ago back here in Arkansas.
The one with the where the guy from the Air Force took a picture of it?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it was big news for a while there. Where it happened, where they saw it from, was Van Buren was where it was reported from. And, you know, it was the biggest one they've seen there, but it's like a few years ago, I was at my ex-girlfriend's house, and from where she stays, you can see, I mean, there's sightings.
Sightings where? All over the place there? It's like kind of an area where you can see that stuff on a kind of a regular basis, is what you're saying? Hey, Chris.
Still there?
Chris, wake up.
Uh-oh.
Oh, see, the men in black got him.
Yeah, shouldn't be talking about those Arkansas sightings. I've been saying that for months. I don't know anything about the Arkansas sightings. I guess you would include them in this big UFO flap that's been going on since the O'Hare sightings. I'm excited in a way about the UFO flap just because everyone's kind of excited about UFOs again for in the past few months. But a flap is a flap is a flap. We've had a lot of flaps and nothing's come out of them. So
right.
I tend to not to be excited about flap, you know, version 8.0 or whatever.
Yeah, well, I'm always, you know, about 3 years ago, I think I was on a show and they said the government's just about to announce it. You know, they're going to break it all open and say that, yes, there have been UFOs. And yes, I said, and at the time they said, do you think that's going to happen? And I said, right, straight out before they even finished the question, I said, no. How are you so sure? It's like, this was supposed to happen in the 50s, the 60s, the 80s, the 90s, and you think it's going to happen now? What makes you think this is any different? And, of course, nothing's happened. And it was just around the corner 3 years ago.
Yeah, I never buy into these disclosure proclamations anymore because I'm just tired of being disappointed. And, you know, being young and 28 and everything is frustrating for me to see guys like Stan Friedman who've been doing this for, like, 30, 40 years or whatever, and they don't have an answer. And, you know, I don't want to be like, I don't want to put another 20 years into this and still be wondering and still be back at square one where I am tonight talking to you.
Yeah, sounds like Chris hung up, which is fine. Yeah, exactly. But the thing is, I think the people that stay in ufology the longest and the people that are most level-headed about it, it seems they're not into it to get the answer out of it.
Yeah.
They're into it because it opens up so many philosophical and scientific and just conversational doors. And you keep learning. I've learned so much just by being interested in UFOs. It has nothing to do with UFOs. And that is exciting to me.
Definitely, definitely. Well, I definitely agree with that because I've taken all these side roads and tangents with the guests and stuff, and I find all the other areas of esoterica interesting. But I kind of have that overall opinion, not just about UFOs, but about, you know, Bigfoot. I love Bigfoot. Bigfoot and some of these other mysteries. I would like answers to some of the mysteries, you know, that's all. I would like, because when I was a kid, these mysteries were all still the same mysteries that we have now.
Yeah.
And there's still mysteries today, and I would like to see, I don't know, a solution to some of these mysteries, just because, you know, everybody loves a good mystery, but you want to pay off eventually, so... A Bigfoot. If we could capture a Bigfoot, I'd be all set with UFO mystery. I'll live in secrecy on that, I guess.
You think that anybody's ever going to capture a Bigfoot?
I hope so. I hope so. If I had the money, I would go hunt a Bigfoot. I really although I'm afraid I would shoot the Bigfoot because I would just feel compelled. I have like a Captain Ahab mentality when it comes to the Bigfoot.
Yeah.
But it's a fascinating. I really do love that. I probably had an interest in Bigfoot longer than I even had an interest in UFOs since like third grade. I've been fascinated by this strange beast.
Well,
he's my black whale or whatever it's called.
White whale. Yeah, that goes back to the first questions. Like, do you remember a time when you weren't interested in paranormal stuff? And if you do, how did you get interested in it?
I think when I was a kid, I got into it I think like Unsolved Mysteries type shows, not so much In Search Of, because that was like a little before my time.
Yeah, that was my time.
Like Unsolved, I know, I get that a lot. Unsolved Mysteries and that sort of like sightings kind of came along when I was really like just getting into my teen years, I think, or something. So those kind of like news magazine-y type shows that profiled that stuff. And then, you know, when I got into high school and college, like that was like the paranormal was the furthest thing from my mind.
Yeah, me too.
As you can imagine. And so then when I got out of college, you know, I was kind of just like, what am I going to do with my life? And then these sort of like big picture questions sort of came up, like, what's it all about? And what are we doing here? And 9/11 happened like 3 months after I graduated from college. So it was kind of like the world changed in overnight.
Yeah.
And it was sort of like, this is weird. You know, I've spent the last 6 years like partying and not really preparing to be an adult. And now I am. And, you know, I'm confronted with, these questions that no one else really seemed to, everyone else kind of moved on with their life and became, you know, working their way up the ladder of jobs and stuff like that. And I was sort of like, you know, what's going on in the world? I'm intrigued by the big picture questions.
Yeah, exactly. That's funny because I, just like you, I totally didn't care about UFOs and all that paranormal, Bigfoot, ghosts, all that from like the age of 5 to maybe 14. That's, you know, that's almost all I read books on. Then after that, nothing, because there was, you know, girls growing up, drugs, driving around fast, all that stuff.
Yeah.
And then, after I was like 25, 26, I think, when it just suddenly became an interest again, because I had like this horrible time for about 2 weeks where a whole bunch of stuff changed in my life. And I just happened to encounter a Robert Anton Wilson article on Wilhelm Reich. And in that, what was it called? God, it was a Fortean magazine put out of Maryland by Mark Chervinsky. What was it called?
I don't know. You're called asking the wrong guy.
Yeah, it was called Weird Something, or I can't remember. And I'm sorry if anybody associated with the magazine is listening. But anyway, it just suddenly, oh, wow, this is interesting again. And then very soon after that, I started writing about it. There was no internet or podcast or anything like that then, so you had to actually go and have editors, you know, pay you maybe to write something. Which is so cool about the way things are now. If you know, I had to just do it myself. It's like I got together with a couple of friends. We put some money together and did a magazine. So you did exactly the same thing, except it's on the internet, which is, you know, 100%, you know, exactly the same thing. You do it yourself with what you have and what you can get your hands on, and get the message out there and learn at the same time. I mean, I suppose that's what you do. Why you do it too? Because you learn things. You can ask people directly on your show.
Exactly, yeah, and I can ask them stuff that a lot of times I'll hear a guest on another show, and I'll, like, have, like, a purposeful rule that we're not going to ask any of the questions we heard on when they were on Coast to Coast.
Right.
Like, because I don't want, unless it's just, you know, the background question or something like that, but, you know, I really want to delve into stuff that I haven't heard yet, because that not only appeals to me, but it appeals to, like, my listeners who, you know, who probably have heard the guest on another show already or something like that anyway.
Yeah. You're not going to ask them another question about some sighting, right? Oh, Jesus.
What's that? What's going on?
No. I mean, that's what...
Oh.
You, and then, like we said, people calling into Art Bell, I saw one of them lights. It's like, oh, God, how long do I have to turn off the radio now before we hear something interesting?
Yeah, and I think... And one of the things I like to do is talk about, you know, break that fourth wall in a lot of ways and talk about the field. Whatever field they're in, you know, and especially one of my favorite things to do is to talk about who their mentors were and who, you know, have them put over the people who laid the groundwork for them, because that's really always kind of interesting to me, and I'm young, so I don't know a lot of these people. Like, I came on after Bill Cooper, so, you know, there's quite a history of ufology and cryptozoology and esoterica before me, and I want to find out more about that, and people do too.
Sorry, Tim, we got another call.
Awesome.
This is Carlos, who's a regular listener and caller. He's in Texas, I believe. Right, Carlos?
That's correct.
Did you have something you wanted to ask Tim here on the air?
Not so much a question, but as a comment. You guys
sure.
were talking about you guys are talking about them making a disclosure announcement or something like that. It's going to be there's no social, as you said, there's no social pressure to make a disclosure statement in the first place.
Right.
And there's no, and for a large, I would guess, if all these opinion polls are correct, there's no, most people already believe that there is intelligent life or whatever coming to Earth, and it's a, as you say, it's a non-life altering issue, and sometimes scientific or the political community is so far behind society as a whole, the actual thing, it's like the government saying it's going to rain tomorrow, and but people are outside standing in the rain, you know, I mean. It doesn't make any difference, a bit of difference in their lives, and they're just wrong. It's just like the latest aerial phenomenon discovery of sprites and blue jets.
Right.
Pilots
right.
have been seeing it for 40 or 50 years. The science says they didn't exist. Oops.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
We've been talking about that, like the science kind of goes along in these careful steps, and is you kind of have to wait for the old guard to die off before new ideas can come in. And that, you know, that's what's happening in ufology and just about any field of endeavor. It's just like, you know, a lot of people know about things on a daily basis, on or a gut level or whatever. They believe their friends before they're going to believe somebody saying that there's no such thing.
Yeah, and there's a weird like situation where, like, you quoted those polls, and it's just fascinating that a huge percentage of people believe in UFOs, and we're not even going to delve into all that, but they believe in the UFOs, but what percentage of those people are, like, want to do anything about it, which is, like, a tiny percentage, which is a really strange, like, sociological sort of thing. Like, they believe in it, but they're not going to do anything about it, or they don't want to do anything about it.
Well, it doesn't affect
them. They don't care to do anything about it.
It doesn't affect them personally on a day-to-day basis, and more importantly, as a factor in survival. I mean, you got to make money, and you got to go to work, and you got to have a job, and you have to pay your rent. If suddenly everybody, you know, the government announces, yes, there's real UFOs here, and there's aliens, all that, it's not gonna obviate you out of that responsibility.
Yeah, I guess then the challenge is for the fields to frame it in a way that it can appeal to that. Those you know, the concerns of people, you know. And I think when I was at the X conference too, somebody kind of asked that very question. They were like, you know, they had a press conference, and one of the reporters there was like, well, how does this affect, you know, the price of a loaf of bread? And I think once if ufology can frame the problem here of what is UFOs in a way that, you know, appeals to the common person on a gut level like that, then maybe we could see some kind of change. But, like, you guys are right. You make the point that, you know, as long as it's not affecting somebody on a day-to-day basis, why bother, you know, doing anything about it?
Yeah, it's academic. Carlos, is there something else you wanted to ask or another comment?
You're questioning Miss Sena's last name, the female blogger.
Oh, Tina?
Yes, Tina. It's there's lots of... She, being from Southern California, I would suspect that she is probably a Latino.
Yeah.
But many Latino last names are also Italian.
Oh, okay. No, well, she's in Massachusetts.
Well, definitely, if she's from Massachusetts, I'd definitely guess that she was probably Italian.
Oh, okay.
Or Italian or Portuguese.
Well, we'll find out from Tim in a couple of weeks if that's true.
Yeah, we'll get an answer and post it somewhere on the website that will be visible, maybe under the plug we have here for the show, for the appearance.
Okay, and tell her to get a picture up there. She'll get a lot more hits on the blog.
I'll let her know.
All right. Anything else, Carlos?
Talk about mind control with baseball. I'm an Astros fan. And I have suffered.
God, when's the last time they won? Like in their have they ever?
They won. No, they haven't. The last Texas team, the Texas Rangers, won just the year before they came to Texas, when they were the Washington Senators, or a few years before that, when they still had Harmon Killebrew playing for them.
Yeah. And Ted Williams is the manager.
Yeah, that's the last time any Texas team won a World Series. So it's been that's why football's so big in Texas.
I guess so.
All right, that's all I gotta say.
Okay, thanks so much for calling, Carlos. We'll talk to you again next time.
Thanks for calling, Carlos.
You're welcome.
All right.
Bye.
Right. Uh oh, more baseball talk. Yeah, that's true.
This is a really weird sort of weekend here because we got you and Kimball on my show, and then we had a little bit of the three of us here on this show, so, and me on your show for 2 hours. So it's a lot of Bernal and Bishop.
Yeah, well, you know, I don't know. I've never had anybody on that I like vehemently disagree with because it would be over so quickly.
You know, I've never had anybody on that like you said, vehemently disagree with. I'm open to listening to people's opinion and giving them a forum to put forward their stuff. But then I've had guests who have, like, personal stories, and I have a hard time as a host, like, really getting into it in a way. And that's not really a slight on their story, but it's just sort of like listening to a UFO sighting or,
right,
listening to someone's, like, abduction experience. Uh-huh. You know, if that's the whole basis for their work, sometimes it's hard for me as an interviewer to, like, put myself in there and get it. And I find myself getting kind of skeptical, obviously, on that sort of thing. And then you feel bad because, you don't want to be like, dude, you know, I have problems here and here. But you still kind of do say that.
Yeah.
You feel kind of bad. And I feel like it limits the interview in a way. Yeah. Personal experience type guest.
Yeah, well, that's the other thing, too. If you've got somebody on that you – the only people I think you would agree – I would vehemently disagree with are people that have unsupportable, stupid ideas. And why have them on in the first place? Even if I don't agree with somebody, if they support it well, it makes a good discussion, a good debate. Has that happened on your show? I said on the thing announcing you'd be on that you actually questioned people, like, where did you get this opinion? You know, why do you think this? Why, you know, why should anybody believe you, kind of thing? I mean, you don't put it in those words, but you come out and say that, whereas, you know, like a George Norrie or maybe even a Jeff Rentz wouldn't do that.
Yeah, well, I try to, like, play devil's advocate or couch the question in the terms of, like, you know, well, what do you say to the people who say, and then, you know, blah, blah, blah. And that gives them an opportunity to, like, respond to the to the critics, because I think maybe some shows they don't get challenged enough. And at least that way, you know, you have them on the record, like, responding to people's critiques of their work, which is rare in some ways, because if you don't get that, then you just get that back-and-forth sort of argument where you don't really – you just get two different versions of the story. At least you get the guest on, you can be like, well, this person says this about you, you know, how do you respond?
Right, exactly.
Get their point of view on it instead of, like, being a taboo subject you're not supposed to talk about.
Yeah, right, exactly. I mean, if somebody the thing is, if you can get somebody to support themselves, you can be a little bit more interested in what they're saying rather than just, you know, if you've got somebody on like Hoagland or somebody saying, well, this is the way it is. It's like, well, how do you know? It's like, because they're covering it up. Like, well, that's what you say, but, then, you know,
I definitely wouldn't just let it lie there. Then you want to, like, sort of go further into, like, well, like you said, like, how do you know that it's being covered up? And let's play devil's advocate here. You know, what if it's this way instead of that way? Do you have a reasoning why it's not? You know, at least to sort of cover all the bases.
Yeah, well, you know what? In UFO and paranormal study, that's as close to peer review as you're going to get, I think.
Yeah. It's too bad that there really isn't that kind of forum for peer review. But then, like, it's really hard to determine what's a peer in the esoteric world because, like, anybody can become a researcher, and there's no real sort of, like, defining, like, school you go to become a ufologist. And, like, you know, people sometimes call me a ufologist, and I'm definitely not a ufologist.
Yeah.
So it's weird, like, that you get tagged with a certain brush after a while or like, people can and people who shouldn't be tagged with certain brushes self-tag themselves, and next thing you know they're hurting everybody else.
Right. Yeah, I a couple times people have said that, and I'd like to put on a card to give to people. Maybe you should do this with your name and under it say not ufologist.
I know.
With a bunch of meaningless letters.
I had you on the program. I called you a ufologist and you were like, I'm not a ufologist. And, like, at the time, I was like, oh, that was dumb of me to do. But, like, I would never do that now because, like, it happens to me all the time. And now I know what, like, you must have been going through when I asked the question because, like, you know, it's like, well, how did you get into ufology? It's like, oh, dude, I'm not in ufology. I'm just sort of, like, you know, interested in UFO subject. And by default, I've become, like, a de facto ufologist just because, you know, I talk about UFOs, and that's all you have to do to become a ufologist.
Yeah, you just hang it's like somebody said, you just hang a shingle out with your name on it that says flying saucer expert. People have to do it like Clark Kent used to do. Clark Kent, UFO expert. Remember that guy?
No.
That might have been before your time, too. I saw him at the 1989 Bill Moore MUFON convention. And I've got a tape of him on this public access TV show from the early 90s. It was Andy and Pat's Groovy Cosmic Love Hour. And the guest was Clark Kent, UFO expert. And a woman actually calls up and starts asking him questions about, you know, where do you get your credentials? And what are you? And he, you know, he stumbles through, well, I've read a lot of books. And, you know, she says, and before she hangs up, she says, you're an expert on crap, and slams the phone down.
Oh, Jesus.
But,
well,
yeah.
Well, you think, there is another kind of annoying sort of aspect to that whole thing, too, where, like, there are people who are researchers, sort of like, we talked about how they sort of poo-poo the newcomers, and that's sort of like another thing that goes on, too. It's sort of annoying to me, where it's like, you know, if you haven't done the field research, you're not a real investigator, and it's like, you know, I've told you about my field experience this past weekend.
Yeah.
It's just sort of disastrous, and like, some people just aren't field researchers, you know? I do my research by interviewing people who are in the field and doing their thing, you know? That's my form of research. It's just as credible as, you know, going out to some dude's UFO sighting and writing it down and, you know, measuring the distance from his house to, you know, the tree across the street or something.
Yeah, it's like saying a statistician is not a scientist or an academic because they're using somebody else's numbers.
Exactly. Exactly. And that's kind of annoying. I mean, I do understand how there are these, like, sort of armchair ufologists that don't really do anything. But there's a gray area that I think some people are kind of unfairly marginalized because, you know, they're just getting into it, they're learning, they're writing about it, and it's like, who are you to have what's your right to write about it or some crazy shit like that? It's like, that's not fair. You can't do that. Like, but at the same, you know, it's a weird sort of, ufology polices itself, but it's not doing a very good job because it's still letting a lot of weirdos and losers through and pushing away people that are good.
Well, the people that I think you agree with, the people that are quote unquote good are people that are championing new ideas, are non-dogmatic about it, but still have a point of view, and are willing to listen and willing to, you know, have a discussion about something that arguably is not something where, like we said, you can have a concrete point of view because you're going to be proven wrong very quickly. We've got 5 minutes left, and I only had one question that we haven't gotten to. You okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just had to cough.
How's the quitting smoking going?
It's going pretty well. It's going pretty well. I think this weekend, once I get off the phone with you tonight, once this interview's over, it'll be like the culmination of a very stressful week with this article I was writing. I can't talk about that just yet till I know for sure that it's all set.
Okay.
But, you know, working on an article about some field research that I did, and then the 5-guest baseball special, and now this 2-hour interview with you. It's been a crazy week, and the computer crashed. So, you know, once I'm done with the interview tonight, I got a little 2-week vacation from the radio show, and we start up again on the 21st of April. So,
well, I'm glad I could be the
relaxing for a while.
Glad I could be the last so-called drill into your tooth before you get the Novocaine and you can rest. Actually, that wasn't the last question. The last question was, what's the future for your site and for the interviews, and do you want to change the show in any way? I hope not.
No, I don't expect to change the show other than to improve the overall quality of, like, the sound and that kind of thing. I mean, we get emails from people that want us to improve the sound, and we're just a one-man operation, and takes time to get that kind of thing up and running and fixed and that sort of thing. Maybe I can look into that over the next 2 weeks while I'm collecting the new interviews. I don't foresee the radio show changing in any way unless, like, I would love to get picked up by, like, XM or something, but I can't see the show going to, like, a real radio style, terrestrial radio, because we benefit from having no commercials, no set time limit. You know, we can go an hour and 20 minutes one week, we can go an hour and 35. You know, so that benefits us in a way that we couldn't do it on a regular radio station. So I don't foresee the radio show changing in any way other than it's just going to be the podcast, seasonal style, take the summer off back in September.
Uh-huh.
I have other stuff in the works. I got a book that I am working on that really right now I'm just sort of looking for the right publisher to pick me up and run with the book. So the Banal book is ready to go as soon as the publisher steps to the plate. And I'm shopping that around. And what else? Video projects that we may have on the horizon, but that's not for, like, another year. But I think you can kind of see an evolution of the website where we started in text, and then we went to audio, and I figure video will be next. And we kind of have a weird voice in a way that I want to keep going
and try to keep growing.
Well, can't wait to see what comes up next. If you got any video projects and bring you over on this end of the country, please tell them. You said you were going to be back in California sometime this year, right?
Yeah, I'll be in San Diego for a week in May. My brother's graduating from law school down in San Diego, so I'll be in San Diego. I might do a little field research down there on the some of the haunted houses and stuff while I'm there. So, who knows?
Okay. Well, I have to go
doing
to
stuff like that, writing new articles for different magazines and stuff. And stay tuned to BinAllOfAmerica.com for updates and all that great stuff.
All right. Well, you know what? I'm gonna go down and I've got an assignment at the Whaley House, so maybe we can go down and do that at the same time.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking about checking out. Actually, the Whaley House. That's weird.
Yeah. Well, if you think of Haunted House San Diego, that's about the only place. There's also the Via Montezuma.
Yeah. That whole old town area is like a quarter mile from where my brother lives. So.
Oh, okay. He lives in Hillcrest.
Yeah. I don't really know. I don't know. Well, maybe even less than a quarter mile. I think it's Hillcrest because that was kind of far away.
That's a couple miles away. Right.
So.
Oh, that's right.
Like it was. That was a bit of a ways, but this was like I could walk to Old Town from his apartment. So.
Oh, okay. So it's a lot closer. It's like near the trolley tracks or something. Okay. Well, Tim, thanks so much for being on the show, and I hope it you got to talk about stuff that you didn't get to talk about last time, and hopefully it'll be a lot different than anything you'll be called upon to talk about in the future, although you're usually the interviewer.
Yeah, it was a great change of pace for me. I always liked doing these interviews, and it was fun, and I need more experience doing them. This is only my second interview ever, so
nobody could tell.
I wanted that, which was a lot of fun, and the callers was a blast. So, yeah, I mean, I had a great time. I like doing the guest stuff just as much as doing the host stuff. It gives me a chance to pontificate on things and and give my opinion when I try not to on my show. So,
right.
It was fun.
Okay,
thanks for having me on.
Yeah, thanks so much, Tim, and I'll talk to you soon. Thanks for listening. Are you still here, Tim?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay. Thanks for listening. It's been Radio Mysterioso here on Sundays from 8 to 10 p.m. I'll talk to you on the air after, I mean off the air after I put the music on there, Tim, all right?
Okay.
All right. And we'll be back next week, 8 to 10 p.m. I don't even know if I have a guest. Oh, you know what? I might have Nick Redfern talking about his new book, Celebrity Secrets, which has little or nothing to do with UFOs, but has everything to do with wild orgies at involving the Kennedys, etc. These are based on UFO files that, I mean, UFO, Freedom of Information Act files that Nick got for different celebrities, writers, all that. Ernest Hemingway, Jack Kerouac, Marilyn Monroe, John Wayne, etc. So that's going to be up at least within the next couple of weeks here on Radio Mysterioso. Till then, keep yourself well. Thanks for listening. And here's something else I picked up last week, which you've probably heard before, but I hadn't heard in a long time.
One morning when I was out shopping, though you'll find it hard to believe, a little blue man came out of the crowd and timidly tugged at my sleeve.
I love you, I love you,
said the little blue man.
I love you to bits. I love you.
He loved me, said the little blue man, and scared me right out of my wits. I hurried back to my apartment. I rushed in and I closed the door. But there on the desk stood the little blue man, who started to tell me once more.
I love you, I love you,
said the little blue man.
I love you to bits. I love you.
He loved me, said the little blue man, and scared me right out of my wits. 4 weeks after that I was haunted, though no one could see him but me. Right by my side was the little blue man, wherever I happened to be.
I love you.
One evening in wild desperation, I rush to a rooftop in town, and over the side push the little blue man who sang to me all the way down.
I love you, I love you,
said the little blue man.
I love you, I love you to bits. I love you.
He loved me, said the little blue man, and scared me right out of my wits. I whispered, thank goodness that's over. I smiled as I hurried outside. But there on the street stood the little blue man, who said with a tear in his eye,
I don't love you anymore.